Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Fred Locken, professor of political science at Truckee Meadows Community College, plus on the Power Pundit panel, John Sandy and James Smack. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always pleased to welcome to the program Fred Locken. He is professor of political science at Truckee Meadows Community College. I wanted to start out with a Trump question, just because what an interesting choice for Secretary of State.
Or a disastrous one. I think this clearly, of all of the appointments, will be... Because in the United States Senate, Democrats and Republicans have to sort of choose wisely. There is a tradition, a respect that a president-elect and a sitting president has a large role in deciding who are going to be their key advisors. On the other hand, given the nature of the types of appointments that have come forward, this has to be creating some of the greatest angst the United States Senate has witnessed in recent times.
Okay, but hang on. Bob Gates, huge supporter. Jim Baker. Huge supporter. These are titans of American foreign policy. And they're saying, this guy is great.
And I'm sure that that will play a role in the questions that are raised during the time of the, if you will, interrogation by the Senate. But the bigger issue, too, are we've never seen anyone with this scale of potential conflicts of interest. And exactly how does he separate himself now from ExxonMobil? And how would, how would his wealth not be impacted based on how he might behave as Secretary of State? And it's been said that the two biggest decisions by Trump that will haunt him for the first year at least will be the decision on the Secretary of State and the issue of his own conflict of interest issues. And here you pick someone who we're told these people are not going to work for any, they're going to work for free. Common sense in the American voter says that there's something weird going on in this process, and this is why there is a checks and balances system and why hard questions will be asked. So I respect people like Baker, and I respect people like Gates, but there is a bigger story to this particular nomination, and I'm very pleased that a Senate process is going to be able to ask some hard questions to hopefully reassure us or to expose what are the legitimate concerns.
Well, it's interesting because this guy obviously has been at ExxonMobil his entire career, I think going back to 1975. He has done international dealings in so many continents, I mean, six continents. He has vast experience of running his own personal bureaucracy at ExxonMobil. If you're going to pick somebody from outside of regular government, I can't think of somebody more qualified.
Well, qualifying comes in many ways, and it's the crux of arguments I always find myself in. There is this sort of worship for the business background. And as someone who has studied politics my entire life, there is a very uneven performance of people who come from a business background into the government world. Our own university system was run like a business for several years under Jim Rogers. There's always this sense that it's going to be the solution to every problem. It's going to take us in bold new directions. And the level of disappointment of business backgrounds in government is a very, very checkered past. So I don't see this as an automatic bullet. I don't the nature of the friendships. are very different because the stakes are so different as a Secretary of State versus trying to run a profit for your corporation and your stockholders. To me, they are two different worlds, and I don't like them when they mix.
It's also interesting to see some of the other choices, for Secretary of Interior and others, Energy Department, Rick Perry, which, I guess he was a big supporter of Trump after he stopped fighting him in the primaries. But that seems a very strange choice for that particular department. And as Ronald Reagan learned, it's very hard to get rid of departments that are the government. Like, he tried to get rid of the Department of Education. And for 8 years, he tried and didn't get anywhere. So I'm not sure that you're going to see Donald Trump being able to get rid of these departments, although I'm sure they would love to, although that would increase the unemployment in this country by a large percentage. But we've seen the environmentalists over the last 8 years have great successes. And it seems to a lot of people that I talk to that they would like to see either a reversal or a halting of some of those environmental groups that have, taken land away from ranches and farmers and development for mining, logging, et cetera, that maybe we'd see some more common sense.
We're back to 1980, 81. And the problem, of course, in politics is always that when one administration takes it too far in one direction, it inevitably prompts this cause and effect to go off in another. So we saw this after Jimmy Carter with Ronald Reagan. And I really have that feel that this is exactly what's going to happen again. But the truth is always...
Is that a bad thing, though? I mean, to have the pendulum swing.
Well, if it would stop somewhere in the middle, no. But unfortunately, we're talking about a day and night difference here where there will be no funding or support for alternative energies, where we move full scale back into oil, coal, and natural gas, where we open up federal lands for fracking, and where we allow offshore drilling, because often those regulations have come because of a failure. And I would hope that any administration, Democrat or Republican, would kind of listen to the facts and kind of make decisions that are somewhere in the middle. And if perhaps the Obama administration had been more balanced, perhaps it wouldn't seem so retaliatory. But bringing a Rick Perry into energy, he'll at least remember the department now, is not necessarily to dismantle it, but to reposition it to one that supports the fossil fuels. But in the bigger picture, we've learned so much about fossil fuels. We know the challenges. We need about a 40 to 50 year stopgap. I teach in alternative energy, so I understand this field. Many have thought that hydrogen or possibly even moving back towards nuclear for a short term, but no one wants to build a greater dependency on fossil fuels. And so this is not consistent with the science, which this administration seems to want to defy on climate change, wants to defy on the issues of the fossil fuels and the problems that we're getting from them. It's too late to call for balance. The election has occurred on November 8th, but I think this is going to become a very contentious part of this administration.
Do you see nuclear coming back?
Well, many have argued that, certainly Yucca Mountain apparently is coming back. And if you have a solution for storage, and if you, of course, attack the regulation that has made it so hard to do nuclear plants, it's very possible that you could see a surge back to it. Because America does need a solution for cleaner, non-carbon generated electrical energy for at least the next 40 to 50 years. And it's an extremely short list. The alternatives aren't ready. They aren't able to carry that burden for the entire country. Nuclear is one that could do that, and I think that we will probably see a more serious discussion of it.
More with Fred Lockham when we come back.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. for romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Fred Locken. He's the professor of political science at Truckee Meadows Community College. So in looking at the U.S. Senate race in Nevada, $27.5 million spent by the two candidates, another $90 million spent by outside interests. So almost $120 million. That was just the U.S. Senate race. This did not include the money that was spent on the actual campaign for president. And if Donald Trump had actually spent as much money as one would normally expect, I don't think the broadcasters could have absorbed that much money.
It was insane, wasn't it? I sadly predicted this as one I didn't want to be right about, but we saw all the fingerprints of 2010 coming back. Nevada is still such a battleground. Harry Reid still involved, leaving but wanting this to be his legacy seat to go on and stay on the Democratic side. Mitch McConnell desperately wanting to get it on the Republican side. I feel very sorry for Nevada voters because not only did we see saturation, there are only a handful of states that experienced this. And I think most Nevadans think this was how the election was across the land. They don't realize how singled out we were.
Go to Montana and watch TV.
Exactly. But under the circumstances, it also implants such an atmosphere of negativity in our voting public. I see it in the students. We already have the lowest voter turnout by percentage of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds in the country, right? But we're the worst of the worst of the worst. And they refused, as I begged them to register, they refused because of what they see as a nasty, dirty, they can't really figure out what the facts are, and we're not talking about the real issues kind of thing. I respect their intelligence. I fear that they've made a decision for a lifetime. We pay a price for this in Nevada. But I've also now, I love making predictions, not always right, but I think we're a blue state now. So I think that as we move forward, they'll waste their money in one election, and then they'll find out that I think that we've crossed over. We're on the left coast now going forward in the 21st century. And that so for me, the good news on the horizon is that we will see less and less of this. And perhaps campaigns can return to some air of more normalcy where we talk about at least some real things as opposed to what we dealt with this time around.
Okay, so the last time around you saw the Obama-Heller split. So we had Democrats on one side, Republicans winning on the other side. Do you not think that there is still opportunity for that to occur that would keep us a purple state?
I really don't. Demographically, from a Democrat Party point of view, the good news was the further awakening of the Hispanic vote in Nevada. 40% of Clark County, 30%, more than 30% in Washoe County, with the two counties that have the population that matters in this state. And with Clark County now probably about 78% of the state population, by 2020, they could be hovering around 80% of the state population. Given the 140,000 edge of Democratic registration they had this time in Clark, it speaks to the party organization differences between the state Republicans and Democrats. But it also suggests that they, at least in this election and in a trend that started with 2012, are starting to get that kind of base that they're going to need going forward.
Do you see any possibility for a third party? Because I really don't, especially with what we saw here with and it was just a disaster.
Cards are so stacked against it. It's so impossible. The real question, though, is we have over 20% nonpartisan in Nevada, largest across the country in almost every state in terms of these people that aren't Democrats and Republicans. Ideally, if we go back to Teddy Roosevelt, what we have is hopefully a jarring to the two-party system by 2020. They'll have clearer messages. Democrats will leave identity politics. Republicans will somehow try to survive Donald Trump, in my opinion. And I think that may bring the nonpartisans independents back into the mix because our system has always been to revitalize the existing party system instead of trying to replace it.
You know, I think that I understand your negativity towards Donald Trump, but I actually think that there is the possibility that somebody who has been so extreme in one direction can actually be the person to get things done. Nixon China would be probably the best example. But we'll have to see.
We'll see.
But quick answer.
Well, I was going to say, we hope so. For America's sake, we hope so.
And that's where we're going to leave it. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great Power Pundit panel. As promised earlier, James Smack is here, the former Nevada Republican National Committeeman, and John Sandy, lobbyist with Argentum Partners. So in our previous segment, we were talking about the state and revenues. Do you think the governor wants to have a record of three sessions in a row of raising revenues?
I think I can say with some certainty that the governor does not want his legacy to be that he's raised revenues in three consecutive sessions. No, I think if he can find a way to balance this budget without any looking at any additional revenues, he's going to be all for it.
So how does he do that?
Well, obviously they're going to have to take some serious looks at the budget and the agencies and their requests and what they're looking for and how they are going to be operated over the next biennium. I think there's, like we were saying in the last segment, really the budget that's been presented or will be presented as it is right now is a wish list. It's a lot of things that agency directors and agency heads have said, in a perfect world, this is what we need to fund, to meet our obligations under the charge of our charters. And, is there room to take away from that? Probably.
James, when you look at probably one of the biggest problems is the increase in Medicaid funding.
That's true. I mean, it is one of the bigger problems, and it's going to be taking up a lot of the revenues that are there. As far as the agency wish list goes, I'll talk a little bit more about that. I think that was part of the reason behind projecting those 5% cuts, because when you're looking at, okay, $7.9 billion is the projected revenue, $8.2 billion is the wish list from all the agencies. You take 5% off of $8.2 billion, you're going to save a lot more than $300 million. So it's a matter that we don't have to go quite so draconian in taking 5% away from every agency, but maybe 1 or 2% might end up making the number that we need to make. And I agree with the governor doesn't want to have his legacy be that he's raised taxes in three consecutive sessions. I think he'd like to get through this with a balanced budget without increasing revenues.
On the other side, we haven't talked about the wish lists of the legislators.
Sure. Well, and we're looking at a new dynamic, and that's going to be, I think, the interesting interplay that we should be watching all session long is, unlike last session, we now have a legislative body that's a majority in both houses with the Democrats and a Republican governor. So the governor ultimately has that power of the veto, and that's a strong power to have, especially if the Democrats have an agenda platform that they would like to see accomplished by the end of the session. The governor can stifle that pretty easily. So they're going to have to work together. There's going to be some give and take, and I think that's what the story is going to be all legislative session is. How is the governor? How many vetoes has he has? Is he setting records, or is he playing nice? And the Democrats are presenting the governor some things that he feels he can sign.
Let's talk about Switch. They've now reached agreement with the PUC to leave NV Energy. Where is this all heading, and what does it mean for the general public down the road?
Well, as far as Switch goes, I think they figure that they can save money by generating their own power through renewable resources. And I think you saw a lot of that MGM and Wynn that wanted to also get out of Nevada Energy and do their own, have their own resources for power generation. And I think you'll see a little bit more of that from the larger companies, but I'm not sure that's going to be the overall trend. And there's still the the elephant in the room about how they handled rooftop solar and that type of thing through the Public Utilities Commission here not that long ago. So I'm not sure Nevada Energy is going to anybody at Nevada Energy is going to be missing any meals because Switch is pulling out of Nevada Energy. So
they won't. But I think the other elephant in the room is the initiative that was passed. Question one that's going to go on the ballot one more time next election cycle.
Question three on
energy deregulation, and mm-hmm. I think that will have a significant effect on consumers ultimately. And I think so as these large commercial users of power are trying to get off the grid or trying to change policy to deregulate in our state, the trickle down effect on that on consumers, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but you know several years in the future, I think our marketplace for energy. Is going to be a lot different than in the future than it is today.
Especially if they pass that question three second time in 2018, the marketplace is going to change considerably. We're going to look a lot more like Texas.
Yes. And what does that mean when you say we're going to look a lot more
Texas,
like Texas?
Well, Texas has competitive energy. I have friends in Texas, and they have four or five power companies they can choose from to deliver the energy to their home, and they can actually price shop and compare and make decisions based upon who's giving them the best deal for what they're looking for. And I think that's what ultimately we're looking at here in Nevada at some point in time. That's probably going to be a larger hit to NV Energy if that actually goes through and it actually turns into a Texas-type system here versus if that doesn't pass again in 2018, then NV Energy is probably just going to keep moving along just like they are.
Okay, but who then provides the infrastructure?
So NV Energy will continue to provide the infrastructure. I mean, that's the transmission lines. It's everything that's been built. And that's why, at the end of the day, in my opinion, NV Energy is going to be just fine where they are. They can be mm-hmm. likely be a player as an energy provider and create energy, as well as control the transmission lines that all these other companies will use to deliver the transmission. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not an apples to apples, but it's a very good example of how the telecom industry and where we are now. With, you know, we can choose AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, and shop and price shop and come up with something rather than go to our public utility and have to, you know, use that one company's service.
The only thing that's scary about that analogy is how much my cell phone bill is each month.
Right, but then it does get competitive and you can bundle services. So, you know, companies can offer a bundled service and you get more of an a la carte menu. And with metering the way that it is today, you know, who knows how creative you can get, and people that want to have just renewable energy can probably sign up to mm-hmm. to just get delivered renewable energy, and people that want a cheaper alternative can do that. And so there's a lot of flexibility that would come with a deregulated market.
Competition's always good.
And that's where we have to leave it. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. We'll be right back.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
On the next broadcast, Valerie Clark, president of Clark & Associates. We're talking insurance and marijuana.